This is an ABC podcast.
In the sky above Sydney CBD, there's a police helicopter circling. It's watching a small crowd of protesters who call themselves Blockade Australia. It's 8 a.m. on a bright and fresh winter's morning on Monday the 27th of June. On the ground, police on horseback keep a close eye as the protesters march down the middle of city roads, speaking to news crews as they go.
We're protesting coal and gas. We're protesting for 100% renewables. We want the right to protest without being arrested on trumped-up charges. We've got a planet to win.
The protesters carry banners saying things like, no new coal, no new gas. Another reads, police overreaction to peaceful climate protesters. Their goal is explicit, to cause the maximum amount of non-violent disruption to the daily functioning of Sydney as Australia's commercial heart. As they walk, some pull bins and traffic bollards onto the street. Traffic banks up behind them, and commuters start calling in to talkback radio.
Get them off Centrelink and stop Centrelink paying their bills.
This is not civil disobedience. This is actually social destruction. These people are out of line with what the community wants. They have no respect for anything. They're literally anarchists, mate.
At the scene, a frustrated driver pushes his car straight through the protesters, knocking at least one of them out of the way. This is what the police call an unlawful assembly, a protest not authorised or sanctioned by law. Soon police have had enough and start making arrests. News crews capture protesters being bundled into paddy wagons.
Do you think your message is getting through today? Do you think people are listening, sir?
Disruption's the only thing that works. We've tried everything else.
This is the attention Blockade Australia is looking for.
You're happy to get locked up for this, mate?
Yes.
Why?
Because it needs to be done.
Blocking traffic, throwing things on the road, is that the way to do it?
Disrupting a destructive system.
All right, you're going to jail, that's all right?
Yeah, any day of the week.
Within just a few hours in this part of Sydney, the protest is dispersed. 10 people are arrested. But around the same time, things are escalating on the other side of the harbour.
Hi, my name's Marley. I'm 22. I'm currently locked on to a car at the start of the Sydney Harbour Tunnel in protest of the climate destruction that is happening on this continent right now.
Marley Cooper travelled from flood-devastated Lismore to Sydney to block thousands of commuters entering the Sydney Harbour Tunnel during the morning rush. She's got a U-shaped bike lock fastened around her thin neck and the car's steering wheel, and she's speaking into the camera on her phone, broadcasting a message to thousands of viewers via Facebook Live.
I've watched mass devastation happen up there this year with 2 1-in-100-year, they say, floods that have happened. This is climate change. It is here. It is happening now.
But as she speaks, the growing number of traffic jam commuters are getting very pissed off.
There are some really angry people who are screaming and threatening me and banging on doors. The police are on their way, and I'm not sure how long that this is going to happen for. I'm a bit overwhelmed.
Behind her, a man approaches her window.
There's a really angry person who's coming up to the car who has been threatening me with violence. Here he is. I'm not sure what's about to happen.
Her camera captures him leaning in, his face distorted with fury.
You fucking everyone, stay up, you dumb cat! Get the fuck out of the way! Hey, you fucking selfish cat! You fucking selfish cunt!
At the end of that day, Marley and nine other Blockade Australia protesters were arrested. The laws being used against them have only existed for a few months and appear to have been introduced to directly target groups like Blockade Australia. The way they've been applied has heightened tensions between law enforcers accused of overreach on the one hand and climate change activists on the other, who say direct action is their last and only resort to force governments into climate action. The question is, are the laws fair and are the punishments appropriate?
Corporate and institutional power is driving the climate crisis and blocking climate action. Australia
inside a community centre in Sydney's inner west, about 20 people are sitting in a circle on a floor of rough grey carpet tiles. They're listening to a young man in a beanie, reading from a pamphlet outlining the philosophy of Blockade Australia.
Blockade Australia is a coordinated response aims to develop a culture of effective resistance through strategic direct action.
This faint recording is being made by a master's journalism student from Melbourne who's set up at the back of the room. It's Sunday the 26th of June, the day before the Sydney protests.
The very system we're in is one of domination, so to resist that, we have to organise in a different way.
This is a highly organised event and it's being strategically delivered. Care is taken not to mention any specifics about upcoming operations. Instead, there are classes in Blockade Australia philosophy.
This is systemic and this is done by a system called Australia. A system that's
how to conduct direct action peacefully and avoid arrest.
Let's just do it again. This time I want you to hold the space as far apart from each other as possible.
There's even a class in medical care and what to do if you're pepper sprayed.
Yeah, it also depends on how badly that being sprayed.
But the main point organisers are keen to stress at this meeting is the risk posed by a new set of laws, with potentially massive consequences.
I'll be doing a legal briefing at 2.
Oh, amazing.
So we'll go into like a lot of other new laws that I might mention.
Just a few months ago, the New South Wales Parliament passed amendments to the State's Roads Act, targeting protesters like the people in this room. The new laws are aimed at anyone who damages or seriously disrupts or obstructs the Sydney Harbour Bridge or tunnel or other main roads. If people are found guilty of breaking these new laws, they face up to 2 years jail and or a $22,000 fine. It dramatically raises the stakes for everyone here.
So I think I've decided that I'm going to be really, really play it careful because I don't want to risk copping that sort of punishment.
At the back of the room, a protester is listening in who doesn't fit the stereotype of a radical activist.
So I'm glad to be getting this advice up front. That's why I'm here.
74-year-old Elizabeth Hartrick is a former Melbourne University administrator and researcher, and a grandmother too. She's retired these days, but has a bright-eyed enthusiasm about her. She's flown up from Victoria to get the briefing and get involved in the protests.
There's some really sort of heavy-duty activists here that are really, you know, committed and passionate. And I'm just, actually, I'm honoured to be amongst them. I'm happy to be here. I think we're all fighting for a good cause. I'm glad to be on their side.
As the briefing continues, Elizabeth pays close attention. She's got form as a climate change protester in Melbourne with groups like Extinction Rebellion and has had run-ins with the police before, but she has no convictions. She knows that understanding the new laws in New South Wales, how they work and how to sidestep them will be key to avoiding a jail term.
I'm confident that even though the risk of punishment is, or the punishment that they're threatening us with is quite serious, but I think I can handle myself like as I have in the past. If I'm told to get off the road by the police, then I just get off the road. So I'm pretty sure that I can avoid getting arrested in this sort of situation.
So it's pretty clear that on the Sunday before the protests, which prevented thousands of people from getting to work on time in Sydney, Blockade Australia supporters like Elizabeth were aware of the potential consequences. They planned to cause disruption, and many hoped to avoid arrest, but some were up for it. On day one of the protests, 10 of Elizabeth's fellow activists were arrested and 9 were charged with offences under the new laws, including Marley, who bike-locked her neck to a car steering wheel. Elizabeth managed to dodge the police, but now it's day 2 of the protests and she's decided to head back out into the streets of Sydney CBD and take another risk.
We just want to keep putting the pressure on. We're at the pointy end so that people start to take notice of what the reality is. You've got to work...
As Elizabeth heads into the rally, a small crowd gathers. Blockade Australia's organisers send messages to the public via social media channels in the hope that others would rally to the cause. But the police have a different idea, and very quickly it becomes clear that they're determined to shut down this direct action before it's barely begun.
And you're under arrest for...
When I catch up with Elizabeth Hartrick and her friend Tony Gleeson, they're standing by a low brick wall in Sydney's Hyde Park.
Our friend here's been pepper sprayed. I'm not sure why. It just seems like there's a complete overreaction from the police.
The more action by police, the more attention from the media. Elizabeth says that's what this is all about.
And this is why we do an action, because we get this attention and it'll get on the news and it gets through to the public. And people are going to get really pissed off and really angry about it. And, you know, you've got to work hard to understand the immensity of the problem that we are facing. And very few people really do. They sort of say, oh, yeah, we know about climate change. We've been hearing about it for years. Well, but what the fuck has happened? You know, we try to do stuff with our plastic and recycling and things like that. It's going to take a much bigger project.
Elizabeth and Tony think they've been pretty careful so far. Both were among the protesters on day one, but they held back from the more dramatic actions. As much as they appreciated the media attention, they weren't planning on getting arrested. Both believe they stayed within the law. Then, as we chat, a police detective approaches.
We're from South Sydney Police.
Yep.
What was your name, sorry?
The detective tells Elizabeth that she and Tony are under arrest, but it's not for anything they're doing right now, or even anything they've done today.
Well, at this stage, I'll just let you know that you're both under arrest in regards to yesterday's protest. You've been identified as being present there. You're not obliged to say or do anything if you don't want to understand that. Anything you say or do, we may record, and that may be used as evidence in court. Do you understand that? Do you understand that? Just before I go on?
Yeah.
Elizabeth and Tony are being arrested after having been filmed walking on one of Sydney's main roads. They're accused of breaching the new Roads Act laws that carry huge fines and a possible 2-year jail term.
So the reason that you're under arrest is in regards to yesterday's protest. Okay, it's alleged that whilst you were present and protesting, you were disturbing a major road, and that's now a new offence. And so for that offence yesterday, you've been placed under arrest.
Elizabeth and Tony seem to have no idea which road they're talking about. They reckon they weren't anywhere near the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the Sydney Harbour Tunnel. Tony isn't happy.
Yeah. You feel good about doing that?
Well, that's what our evidence shows, that you were present yesterday, and that
we're
part of your actions...
We're walking down a street and that's breaking a
law. Well, walking down the street is a major road, yeah. So I want to remind you don't have to say or do anything.
Yeah, but I can, can't
yeah.
I?
Yeah, you can certainly say something. Yeah. So anyway, for now, we're going
to
take you...
Because all the time, you're not free to leave.
Yeah.
Sorry?
So at this point in time, you're not free to leave,
all right? Here to the custody bus.
They're led into a police minibus to be photographed and processed. I managed to grab a few words from them before they disappear inside.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's a police repression. Like, we're at a street, is it okay if I talk to him? Yeah, no, I know. What am I going to do? Right? I'm not going to go. I'm just here. It's all part of intimidation, I guess. But, yeah, we walked down a street essentially yesterday.
As the two are taken to a paddy wagon, Elizabeth shouts a final rallying cry.
We're in a climate crisis. The government of this country has to do something now, urgently. It's too late. We're in a climate emergency. We are in a climate emergency.
There's a bit of a backstory to how these laws came to be. And it started with a series of increasingly disruptive protests demanding more action on climate change.
We are riding in a vehicle without a kill switch that is barreling us towards total climate collapse. And it's up to us to put on the brakes.
What you're hearing is taken from the slick videos Blockade Australia has made about its actions.
The system is rigged. It's not broken. It's working exactly as it was designed.
The first big one was in November last year, when the group's activists shut down coal exports from the port of Newcastle for 11 days. Activists scaled machinery and locked themselves to train tracks, disrupting $60 million worth of coal exports. The action made international news. In Australia, police and politicians of all colours were furious. Even New South Wales Treasurer Matt Keane, known for being outspoken in his own calls for more federal government action on climate change, was scathing of the activists.
Pull your heads in, get out of the way, and stop hurting other people going about their lives, running their businesses, and standing in the way of growing our economy. There are hundreds of ways to make your views known and advocate for change, but risking the lives of our rail workers is definitely not one of them. The police need to take a tough stand on this. They need to throw the book at these protesters, and I'd expect nothing less.
At least 17 people were arrested after that action and charged under existing laws, including one obscure charge relating to interfering with railways, which carried a potential jail sentence of up to 25 years. Then, in March this year, Blockade Australia activists struck again.
I'm about to hang off this bipod that's attached to the only rail access line into the largest container port in so-called Australia.
This time they hit Australia's biggest container port at Port Botany in Sydney. They scaled a crane and disrupted access points to the port for five consecutive days. In the end, nine protesters were arrested and one of them was sentenced to 4 months jail. In response, the New South Wales government introduced its amendments to the Roads Act, while the state's police established a new task force. It's called Strike Force Guard. And its explicit mission is to disrupt the activities of protest groups like Blockade Australia even before they begin. I approached the New South Wales Police weeks ago to participate in this story so I could get a better understanding of this new approach and hear it from them directly. The police said they couldn't be involved. So it's a beautiful day in Sydney. The sun's out. Lovely winter sunny day. I'm in Camperdown Memorial Park and I'm here to meet with some people that are associated with Blockade Australia, and they're just sitting here on a park bench. Hi, Jeff Thompson, background briefing.
Hey Jeff, nice to meet you. I'm Jonah.
Hi Jonah.
Hi Jeff, my name's Olivia.
Hi Olivia, how are you going?
Nice to meet you.
Olivia's not her real name. She wants to use a pseudonym as she has matters before the courts relating to last year's Blockade Australia protest in Newcastle. But she's keen to talk about Strike Force Guard because a month ago, the week before the peak hour protests in Sydney, she came up against them in a really dramatic way. It was the morning of Sunday, the 19th of June, and Olivia was at a Blockade Australia training camp on a remote private property in Colo, about 80 kilometres northwest of Sydney. She was having a cup of tea and about to have breakfast by the campfire when members of her group stumbled upon two men in camouflage spying on them.
Effectively, there were two fully camouflaged, like wearing camouflage hat gear men hiding in the bushes, photographing and watching us.
Olivia says people at the camp approached the men and started filming them.
They were armed and they were identified by a few of the people on site who said, "Hello, who are you?" They didn't speak. One of them said into what we presume was a hidden microphone, "We've been compromised."
Olivia's friends confronted the men in camouflage as an unmarked car sped towards them. What happened next was recorded.
Hey, don't touch me.
Get really good. Get the fuck away from me.
The footage shows two camouflage men getting into the unmarked car and the Blockade Australia members surrounding it.
Someone get on the back. Someone get... climb them in.
Let's
Oi, fucking hell! Oi! Get out of the way, guy!
Fucking dog!
There's an old fucking woman there!
Old woman, oi!
Move the car!
Block the road!
Are we deflating their tyres?
You really want to fucking kill someone?
Activists can be seen sitting on the car to stop it from leaving, but it drives forward, knocking some of them to the ground.
You guys are right.
And quite badly injured a few. A few people were thrown up onto the bonnet and then onto the glass of the windscreen.
When the car stops, some of the activists deflate the car's tyres. Soon after this, uniformed police arrive and spread out across the property. Seven people at the camp are arrested on the spot and charged with a range of offences including obstructing police, willful damage, assault, affray and aiding in the commission of a crime. Two of them were refused bail and sent to jail because of previous charges relating to actions in Newcastle and Port Botany. When I asked police about what happened at the raid in Colo, they declined to comment because the matters are still before the courts. But they've previously claimed the police in the car that day feared for their lives.
So where are we going today?
Penrith Court. We've got seven of the Colo troublemakers, the affray makers, the assaulters, the malicious damagers, apparently.
Mark Davis is a former veteran journalist and foreign correspondent who these days acts as a solicitor in criminal matters. He's taken on the cases for everyone caught up in what they're calling the Colo raid, including the two young men still in prison, Tim Neville and Max Kermy.
I think these cases will all ultimately and utterly collapse. I think they're baseless accusations, and yet they're being whacked as hard as any criminal in state right now, and unfortunately two of them have been kept in jail and they're having a terrifying time.
Mark and I are in his car on the way to Penrith local court to appeal the decision refusing the men's bail. It's mid-July and they've been in jail for almost a month.
It's not quite solitary confinement, but they're in basically lockdown. It's not as a particular punishment to them. Yeah. But at the moment, there's very little circulation in the prison, so it's not a pleasant place to be. You're in your cell pretty much all day. All the programs have been abandoned. Basically, they're essentially in lockdown.
Unknown caller.
This call is originating from the Parkley Correctional
Centre. Mark gets a call. It's Tim Neville, one of the guys still in prison.
Hello,
Mark Davis.
Hi, it's Tim. How are you going?
Tim, good to hear you. We're ready for today, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. I've just been having some conversations with Max about the potential that Max is not going to get bail because...
Tim's worried that his Blockade Australia mate, Max, won't make bail because he's the subject of a Community Corrections Order, or CCO, for scaling a 60-metre-tall crane during the protest in Port Botany.
I guess basically what we want to know is if it's possible for you to ask for Max to go first. In the event that Max does go first and isn't given bail, I don't want to apply for bail.
As a mark of solidarity?
Well, because there'll be another 5 or 6 weeks here in jail and it's not somewhere where one person should... We think one person should be isolated. I think that would add to the punishment they're trying to put onto us.
Basically, Tim's volunteering to stay in jail to support his mate Max. Mark Davis urges caution.
Well, you're a nice guy. I won't take that as an instruction yet. If that happens, I'll adjourn and make a phone call to you. I wouldn't advise doing that because... It may be a wrong analysis to say he is going to be harder to get than you, right? Maybe you'll be harder. Remember, they've called you a leader, right? Maybe these things are pretty eccentric sometimes, you know? It's just a magistrate looking at you, looking at the facts. There's no sort of logic to it. It's not a formula. So just let's wait and see. And thank you for that offer, actually. I'm sure Max appreciates it. But all right, mate, let's see. So stand by, Tim. I've got a good application for you. I know you're having a horrible time, but it may be ending. So let's just keep our fingers crossed.
Great.
Okay, mate. I've got to keep pushing. I've got to drive to Penrith. Okay, see you, Tim.
I asked Mark what he thinks about the charges being laid against the protesters.
There's an array of charges that protesters normally face historically. And they're predictable sort of charges, like entering closed lands, you know, basically a trespass sort of charge. Refuse to comply with the direction, you know. That's what normally you would expect when you're protesting somewhere. And those penalties are, well, they hurt you, but they're modest. They're mostly fines, right? What's happened recently in New South Wales is they've rapidly escalated the level of offence they're applying to very, very minor offences.
He tells me he thinks the establishment of Strike Force Guard, the police task force designed to preemptively disrupt climate change protesters, has changed the game in New South Wales.
This is a dedicated unit. It has a very fixed agenda, and that agenda is, in fact, to harass. It is to charge people with the most obscure pieces of statute that you could imagine. That wouldn't apply to a normal person. So it's disturbing when you have a subsect of society that is to be targeted with intense police resources and highly motivated prosecutions. It shouldn't be that way, unless, of course, you are a terrorist group, and then we, you know, would and do expect extra levels of attention. There's no terrorists amongst this group. There's not even any violence, either violence against person or violence against property. At its highest, there's some sort of traffic inconvenience. Well, I don't think you need, you know, the equivalent of anti-terror squads and anti-terror laws to take on people that might slow down the traffic somewhere.
When we arrive to a quiet scene at Penrith Local Court, there's a few SUVs marked Public Order and Riot Squad parked across the road.
But look at this, Public Order and Riot Squad. Fucking the Riot Squad for a court.
Inside, Max Kermy and Tim Neville are appearing via a video link from Parkley Correctional Centre in northwestern Sydney, dressed in prison greens. The police prosecutor argues against them being granted bail because he says they're likely to re-offend. At one point, he invokes a terrorism analogy, stating that, quote, ideologically motivated people, whether it's religious or otherwise, are unlikely to be mitigated in their views. The magistrate ultimately disagrees with him and rules to release Tim and Max subject to strict bail conditions. The two men are told to leave New South Wales within 48 hours and not step foot within Greater Sydney except for court matters. They're also not permitted to communicate in any way at all with about 20 other people associated with Blockade Australia.
Justice has been served. I mean, these guys, honestly, they're young guys, nice guys, no violence, no crime, nothing. To be put in a prison for 3.5 weeks they've been in there, and I think we established quite clearly there is almost no offence on the police zone. Fact, the Blockade Australia people were running amok and doing this and that, and somehow our boys were somewhere in there. Well, give me a break. So anyway, I'm very grateful to the court. They would have been in there another month before we could get to the Supreme Court. Or if they were unlucky there, they would be in jail, those boys, for probably 8 months before we got to a hearing, where they will be vindicated and they will be acquitted. Or on the basis of these charges, I think I'd be surprised if they even proceed with them.
I asked the New South Wales Police specifically about Strike Force Guard and whether its show of force was proportionate. They directed me to previous press releases about why the strike force was set up.
Well,
What's happening in New South Wales with Strike Force Guard and with the amendments to the New South Wales Roads Act are part of a wider trend. In almost every state in Australia, there have been similar moves by police and governments against protesters using disruptive direct action techniques. Most of these protesters are climate activists, and it's happening overseas too.
What I would say is that, you know, this is a trend, and it's a trend that these laws were often started being introduced during or just after COVID. So, you know, we can see that it's definitely a thing that is happening.
Dr. Oscar Berglund is a political scientist at the University of Bristol in the United Kingdom. He says since a series of Extinction Rebellion protests swept across England, penalties have increased and police powers widened. In response, Dr. Berglund helped draft an open letter in support of direct action protests on climate change. The letter was co-signed by more than 400 academics, including authors from the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
I think that a lot of people in the climate change scientific community felt that this renewed emphasis on climate action, that the concern about climate change in amongst the public and amongst policymakers kind of increased as a result of protest in 2018 and 2019 in a way that they hadn't actually been able to produce themselves through their research, and they felt that actually this protest has really helped that, and what's happening now is that they're cracking down on the very same kind of protest that has actually helped raise the climate question.
But Oscar Berglund cautions that the enthusiasm for the Extinction Rebellion approach in the UK has now died down.
If you look at the UK, the kind of civil disobedience movement certainly involved more people in 2019 than it does right now. But those that are really heavily involved with it are often willing to go to greater lengths and put themselves at greater risk in order to do so.
For now, in Australia at least, climate activists are avowedly non-violent. Oscar Berglund isn't so sure that will always be the case.
I don't see that having huge traction in Australia or in the UK anytime soon, but you know, who knows what things will look like in 10, 15, 20 years' time.
I'm walking through Sydney's CBD through some of the streets that the Blockade Australia protesters were on when they were arrested. Most of them, like me, was smack bang in the middle of the city, nowhere near at all, really, to the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the Sydney Harbour Tunnel. But that's what nearly all of them have been charged with. That's the new Section 144G1B of the Roads Act, which, since April this year, has made it an offence jailable for up to 2 years and or a $22,000 fine to damage, disrupt or obstruct the Sydney Harbour Bridge and other major bridges, tunnels and roads. And so I've got an appointment right here in the city centre at Martin Place with the New South Wales Roads Minister, Natalie Ward, to talk about which roads this applies to.
Hi Natalie, how are you going? Yeah, nice to meet you.
Natalie. Thanks for going in.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me.
Have a seat.
New South Wales Roads Minister, Natalie Ward, has some skin in the game when it comes to climate protesters. She's experienced them directly. She was held up by a different group when they were blocking a bridge in northern Sydney earlier this year.
You know, one morning I sat there on the Spit Bridge in that traffic and saw the family next to me in the car with three kids in their school uniforms trying to get to school, a stressed parent, people trying to get to work and just go about their daily lives. And for me, that really brought home the scale of the interruption. So we felt that we had to take action. No one disagrees with the right to protest. We live in a fantastic country where everyone can have their say. And that for me is a fundamental right of everybody in this country. But we also need to balance that with our obligations as a community to respect each other.
I asked Natalie Ward specifically about the changes to the New South Wales Roads Act, which can send people to jail for up to 2 years. I'm trying to get to the bottom of which roads they apply to.
Can you outline for us the changes to the Roads Act and how they're being implemented?
Yeah, so the amendments that were made, Parliament had to sit back for the extra Friday to get those through, because what we had put forward was that we would increase those penalties on major roads, major infrastructure, tunnels, bridges and ports. And so we made those amendments to the Roads Act. We then had to work closely to roll that out across some through the legislation. There were 70 amendments brought to what we thought was a reasonably straightforward amendment to say you can't hold up major infrastructure, particularly in the Sydney CBD, where we have really complex infrastructure which has roll-on effects. If you interrupt someone on the Sydney Harbour Bridge, that has a flow-on effect to a whole lot of other areas.
I point out to the Roads Minister that most of the Blockade Australia protesters arrested last month were nowhere near the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the tunnel. We're talking about, you know, the recent protests in Sydney and, you know, people were walking around Kent Street, Bridge Street, streets in the CBD, but they were charged with this offence, which can attract a $22,000 fine or a two-year jail term.
Well, they are main roads, and main roads were included in the legislation. It's very clear and transparent which roads are included, so that's on...
Where is that?
Yeah, I think it's... we'll get you that detail, but it's Transport for New South Wales. I'll get you the exact link. But that is clear. We've put out there where, and you can see where those roads are and are not.
Now, I can't help notice you've got a lovely view of the CBD here from your window. Is it possible from here to point out to me which streets are illegal to walk on and which are legal?
No, well, there's nothing illegal about walking on streets. You can walk on any street,
walking
anywhere.
Walking on a road.
You can walk, well, no, you can't walk on the roads unless you've organised to do so, or unless you're crossing lawfully at traffic lights when the light is green. So, you know, I don't want to be trite about this. This is important, sensible legislation that I think, you know, puts in place a real standard for behaviour.
We wrap up the interview, but before I leave Natalie Ward's office, she's keen to give me the correct link to the site that's meant to spell out which roads can't be walked on without the possibility of a massive fine or 2 years in jail.
So the link for that is www.transport.gov.au.
But that won't be the exact spot though, because that's just the general transport.
Yeah, so if you go into, obviously, www.transport.nsw.gov.au and the link will be for there. We'll get you the specifics onto the actual roads, but that is to list out each of the roads that's classified under the Act.
When I clicked on that link, it just took me to a general webpage for Transport New South Wales. So I rang and texted Natalie Ward's office asking for a direct link to the list of roads you told me about. A few days later, I get an email with a list of nearly 8,000 officially designated roads across New South Wales. And it seems 700 of those roads qualify as major roads. And that means obstructing any one of them could now land you in jail for up to 2 years.
Well, we've got today 13 people facing 2 years jail for daring to walk on the streets of Sydney, nowhere near the Sydney Harbour Bridge or the tunnel. 2 years jail for daring to walk on the streets of Sydney for an environmental cause. No violence, no destruction. It's mind-blowing.
It's now 3 weeks since the protests, and I'm back talking to solicitor Mark Davis outside a Sydney courthouse, where he's just entered not guilty pleas for another 13 Blockade Australia protesters.
So I entered their not guilty pleas today. All good people, ordinary citizens, facing 2 years jail. And none of them are facing that lightly. It's deeply impacting all of their lives, as well as the incredibly oppressive bail conditions that you might normally apply to a serial sex offender or a, you know, recidivist drug dealer.
Protesters' cases won't be before court until next year, and until then, they are banned from using encrypted apps or associating or communicating with their activist friends in any way at all.
The actual hearing will not be till March next year, which is a bit devastating because I have to go on, continue on in this sort of half-life with the bail conditions.
Now banned from New South Wales and back at home in Melbourne, Elizabeth Hartrick is feeling isolated and alone. She was hoping to visit her grandchildren in New Zealand, but strict bail conditions may prevent that. In spite of all this, her resolve is unwavering.
You've just got to give it a go. I can't not do this. I can't not do this. I can't just sit home, you know, being a retired granny and not get out there and bloody do what I can. And I just feel so proud and honoured and privileged to be part of that. And I just think that, you know, part of the theory is that real change, social change, hasn't happened without some kind of rebellion or revolution, and that we've got to do it. We've just got to be in there and just building whatever barricades we can, just try to keep pushing through. Because the political will just gets... They just go back to sleep. Just keep sleepwalking. We can't keep sleepwalking.
Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Isabella Tropiano. Additional reporting by Sean Roos. Fact-checking by Ben Sveen. Background Briefing's supervising producer is Alex Mann. Our executive producer is Fanu Falali. And I'm Jeff Thompson. You can subscribe to Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.